Okay. Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here. I kind of put it on record. So that we get this, I forgot to do that. Go on. I'm sorry.
Okay, well, I finished. Anybody else?
This is Bernadette from Harrah County. So because we got Baby Friendly about a year and a half ago, we're doing pretty much the same thing that Lori said about the audit tools that Baby Friendly give us. We had to do that and turn that in October. And we re-interviewed staff and made sure that everybody passed at least 80% on each question. And everybody pretty much did with that. They did really well. And then we had to turn that in. But we also have other things that we're doing. Like I still do chart audits quarterly, and we do verbal audits monthly. We have somebody that goes around and talks to the patients. So we're keeping up with that. We do about 20 people on the verbal audit per month just for feedback. And then informal ways that we have have that on there. We talk about lactation. We have a section at every staff meeting. So we have monthly staff meetings, and they give us 10 minutes to, like, review something. And so often that's related to Baby Friendly. And then we also are doing we have HealthStream, which is the online education. So each year we're doing some type of HealthStream assignment where they have to take a quiz. And then we also have competencies. So that's kind of what we're doing to try to keep the staff up on everything.
Great.
I guess it's my turn, Amy. This is Vicki at St. Agnes. We are in the process of pursuing Baby Friendly. So we are doing audits on, during that time when you're doing that preparation, doing monthly audits on antenatal education, staff education, inpatient knowledge, you know, with going around to the moms and doing mom surveys. Did the moms get the education and the support that they needed to get? And for each of those, we do about 30 a month. So that is how we formally make sure that staff are following the policies. I've found that in, like Bernadette said, doing chart reviews is really helpful, but also comparing the chart review to what the mom says. So we take all the mom surveys and do a chart review for the specific mom that has a survey, because it can help us catch any places where there are misunderstandings, where the staff thought that they presented a certain material, but that's not the way the mom received it, and that allows us to adjust.
Great.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Thanks for sharing. Good to get ideas. Okay, so, and I know, how often are the formal checks done at your facilities?
Well, I'll go first. This is Bernadette. So, you know, while we were preparing for Baby Friendly, we did a lot more often. But now, once we got it, we did back that off a little bit. But so that would be, I guess, by formal checks, you mean like the audits or actually watching staff interact?
Yeah, your audits.
Okay. So the audits, we did monthly during our process of becoming Baby Friendly. I did drop that back to quarterly, where we do about 50 charts, but then the verbal audits is once a month we do 20 charts. How often do I do that?
Anybody else?
Well, like I said, this is Vicki again. We do still monthly because when you're in it, that's a requirement when you're with Baby Friendly.
Yeah, this is Laurie. We're maybe like quarterly doing it. But I have a question for the other two hospitals. How many staff do you have?
You mean for labor and delivery and for maternal child unit?
Yeah.
I would say, if you count the RNs, I think it's about one. It's 130 RNs.
Okay.
So we have about 120, roughly.
Okay. All right. Yeah, we're at like 115. So, I just was wondering how, you know, if it was a bigger facility, if they had more staff, how to stay on top of that.
It's not easy.
Staff audits, yeah, the staff audits are hard. I don't know if you guys find this, but the staff, like the parents are just, they're just filling out a survey. So when you talk to them, they're happy to tell you about their experience. Or sometimes they don't want to do the survey, but they send you out. I think sometimes the staff feels like they're being tested. So they see you coming around with the surveys and like roaches. They're all gone.
Right.
They scatter.
Right,
so
exactly.
It can be really challenging. And it can be especially challenging because the people we have doing the surveys are nurses. And some of our surveyors are more assertive than others, but some of the doctors really give them a hard time. And so I think some of our less assertive nurses are a little bit intimidated and about approaching these people and getting the survey. So it's, I guess it's just something we have to work on.
Right. Yeah, we're having a hard time with just finding the time to be able to do it because we're just so busy and limited staff that it makes it difficult to get it done because everybody's trying to work it in on their day that they're working, you know. So you're seeing patients and then having to do this on top of it, which just kind of can make it really hard.
Yeah, I agree. It is hard to fit it all in.
So on that note, who's responsible for doing the breastfeeding QA and the audit? Is it you guys? Do you have, one of you said you have certain nurses doing it. Are there specific people? Do you rotate that responsibility?
Well, at Upper Chesapeake, we try to pull the nurses in, but like I said, they get so busy that then it's not getting done. So it inevitably falls back on lactation, which we don't have the man hours to be able to be doing this too. So it's becoming very stressful to try and stay on top of it and keep everything going. This next go around, we're going to be auditing our prenatal clinic, and we've decided that we're going to hand that audit tool to the office manager there because they keep telling us that yes, their staff and the docs are educating the patients on the information, but yet when we just informally ask our moms, they'll say they weren't. So we're hoping that's going to be an eye opener for them, that for them to have to do the audit tool themselves and to see what they get. So
Amy, one thing I found, this is Vicki, the audit tool, the way Baby Friendly sets it up, some of the questions, you have to be able to use some critical thinking and some critical judgment. So I have a specific team of people. There's a sharp learning curve with these surveys, and they can be kind of cumbersome in the beginning. It's awkward. But so I have just a couple of people who are already PRN nurses, and they come in and do it extra, or I do them myself because it's just, the first few times somebody does it, it's not as easy as it looks. So it's not, I haven't found that we can just hand it off to whatever nurse is here. I don't feel like we get very meaningful data. And when I first had the nurses doing it, one of the things I noticed they would do is they want to defend their colleagues. So if the mom didn't know something, they would jump in with, well, yeah, but that's because, you know. But the bottom line with the survey is you kind of have to be cold-hearted about it. And I'm a pretty much of a softy, but you have to just cut it. It's either yes or no. If they don't answer the question, it's a no. And then we can go back and look deeper into the chart and investigate and see if there was a legitimate justification. But what was happening was, you know, in the beginning, they'd want to count something as a yes because they would, well, but I think this happened or that happened. And like I said, that survey has to be just very objective. And you have to use some judgment, and you can ask more probing questions. But we can't just assume that because, well, it was such and such a nurse, and they always do a good job. So I'm not sure if this patient really remembers. Of course, the nurse taught her that. So, you know, what's more important is, does the patient walk out having the information and keeping that objectivity? And I'm interested, Lori, what you said about the prenatal surveys. I've been reluctant to hand those over to the office staff because, first of all, they don't want them. They're not going to do it. So there's that. But also, I worry about whether the questions will whether they'll be objective in answering the in asking the questions.
And that is totally a valid point, because I've sat in meetings with my nurse managers and I've said, you know, the way these surveys are done for Baby Friendly, we're just answering it and turning it back in. I can see as this could be easily fudged and just made up and just put what they want to hear on there. But at least my nurse manager is, no way are we doing that. But I'm hoping that this office manager that keeps telling us that they're doing it, by her doing the survey,
right,
she's going to see that they're not doing it, so that hopefully she wouldn't just fudge it. But I actually am hoping to, because the way Baby Friendly says it, it's the prenatal information gets given out between our prenatal clinic, but also other avenues. And so we do have WIC. And so I was going to reach out to Marge up here in Harford County to see if she could survey some of her moms and mm-hmm. just get an idea what they say. You know, if they're, because they really are saying where they just want them to get the information wherever it's coming from, you know.
Right. Well, and the other thing you can do, too, is use some of your antenatal testing. That's what we found, is that because they were on site, I could run over, I do run over periodically and just get a couple of prenatal surveys a couple times a week over there. And it is an objective person that's not me that can be asking those questions if they're willing to do it.
That's a very good point. We've not thought about that, and that is going to be what we're going to do.
It's just because it's down the hall. We were desperate.
Right, right. Yeah, we're just concerned that our providers are not doing what they're telling us they're doing. It seems just like that they're not doing it. Just because we ask the patients ourselves, you know, postpartumly mm-hmm. after they've delivered, they're saying, no, they never talked to me about that. We're like, okay, they're telling us they are, but they're not. So, but that's this next one. So we'll see what it pops through.
Could I just add just an observation about that? You know, it's hard to tell what is going on in that situation, because lots of times moms will attend a class or they will have like a video education. They'll have nurses who sit down with them and go over all kinds of questions and answers and even sign the form that they've been educated on this. And then when they're asked later, they will tell the person asking that they never received any education. I've seen that happen for years and years. So it's a hard thing to know if the mom just didn't remember, or if the fact
and I've thought
didn't
yeah.
give it. So, you know.
Yeah, I've thought that same thing. I agree. I've thought that same thing in my head.
I've seen
one
it for
things,
years
though,
and years.
I mean, that's legitimate, but one of the things that I've learned, probably the biggest takeaway lesson that I've had through doing these surveys, is if you're really doing it as a quality improvement,
yes.
If that's happening, if you're finding that the education you're giving, the surveys can be really useful, because even let's just assume that those doctors are giving the education, but the patients aren't able to answer the question or they don't remember it, then that means that either our delivery or our materials aren't effective. And, you know, in doing some of the recent surveys, I stumbled across that. It looked like some of the OBs, when I'm looking at the different surveys and trying to find patterns and discern different patterns and behavior in the data, what I'm seeing is some of the practices are sitting down with them all at once in the early pregnancy and going over all of it. And then what happens is the mom doesn't even necessarily recall she had education. Then when I show her the handout, she's, oh yeah, that doctor went over all of them back in visit whatever, and she didn't retain any of it. So that has caused us to rethink the way the materials were given. And what I found is that a lot of the offices, we'd formatted our prenatal education to be one small handout at each visit that's very, very, very small, with just little nuggets of information about different topics. And if they can keep it down to that, the practices that do that, we find that the moms are able to answer the questions. They do retain the information. So I agree that sometimes people really don't remember, and you can do all the education. It depends if they were tired or, you know, distracted, or they had another child, they were worried about the pregnancy or whatever's going on. But I would challenge us to look at that as a quality improvement opportunity to look at. Maybe we need to rethink the way we're doing it. Is there something we could change that might change that outcome? Maybe there is, maybe there's not.
And this is Bernadette.
Very good point.
And we had the exact same of what you're talking about when we were doing this, because we have two really big practices and then a couple smaller ones. The two bigger ones, they were giving, we had a booklet that covers everything. One of them went over the entire thing, but on the first visit, and the same thing, the moms would forget they ever even got it. The other one gave it when, they said around 24 weeks when they got lab work. They made that their practice, that they would give it to them then, because then they do remember it, because it's more recent, and they seem to remember more about it. But what we did was, for the practice, because they still wanted to do it that way to introduce everything, was made a brochure that highlighted, like, all the main points to give later. And that helped some. we do still have the same problem of moms saying no, they didn't get. The way we have different ways of asking. When on admission, every patient is asked by the labor and delivery nurse if they got any breastfeeding education. And we still get too many no's. I mean, but we break it down. We ask them, well, it could be WIC, TORS, classroom, or your OB office. And what we did too was with that, we have TORS and they're very popular. So most of our people will come and do a tour if they haven't had a baby here yet. So we've included a good bit of baby-friendly information on the tour. They talk about rooming in and skin-to-skin and exclusive breastfeeding and things like that. So that's helpful, too.
Well, this is Amy. Just to put in a pointer of one thing that's going on, Hopkins has a research study that we're involved in that I'm working on with them now, that we are actually looking at the effectiveness of the baby-friendly hospital in the WIC population. So we're going to be asking some of this stuff, people that have delivered at your hospitals, because we're looking at Howard County and at Upper Chesapeake, comparing it to some non-baby-friendly hospitals, which might be following Maryland Hospital breastfeeding policies also, but, you know, we want to see if we can see a difference. We're also looking at some of the baby friendlies in Southern Maryland as well, just because there are areas that we can pinpoint. So we might have, you know, this is a 3-year grant, so we might have down the road some additional information for you.
Okay.
Interesting. Awesome. Good.
Okay. Let's go on to just another question, and I think you started to touch on it, so I want to kind of address it a little bit more, is staff response to this. How has staff responded, and have any of you been able to come up with anything to turn the tide and help staff respond in a positive versus a, you know, rather than a negative way?
Well, this is Bernadette. I'll just talk a little bit about it. We have, of course, had some in the beginning. A lot of staff was negative. There's a group that was negative, but that's kind of subsided. I think because of our management backup, the managers have to be really invested in this and show an interest and talk about it, and that helped a lot. And they were really good about it. So they couldn't be so outspoken about being against some of the changes. But and I think, again, we got a lot of newer nurses that are much more receptive because they're learning this is how it is right from the start. They're learning, and they're more likely to stay positive about it. But I know there's still, you know, a little bit of negativity here and there, but it's subtle, and mostly people are pretty positive or listen when we review a lot of the stuff.
I'd say the same thing up at Upper Chesapeake. Most of the staff is receptive to it, and because management backs it, we've not really had too many issues. And I'm dealing probably more with older staff, people older in age that we've been there forever. And sometimes they get stuck in their ways. I think the biggest thing for us is the staff that come from another facility that are kind of set in their ways there and changing to meet the requirements that they have at our facility. Sometimes we've got to rope them in, but it's not been hard at all. So that's not been too much of an issue. For the most part, it's all been positive.
Good.
I would, this is Vicki, I would echo the part about management support, because we're still in the process, so we're still probably in the painful part while, you know, there's still some resistance going on. Not, you know, there's a lot of people who embrace it and a lot of people who do say the 3-hour competency of the 5 hours where they go around with a lactation consultant and they latch babies and they, you know, say that that's very helpful, and others, you know, drag their feet and come. But for the most part, we found our managers are very supportive, and we need them to be able to go back and implement some kind of disciplinary process in some cases, just to set the tone that this is absolutely an expectation. It's not negotiable. No, you're not going to just get out of it. No, it's not stupid, you know, so that those people who are kind of bringing other people down get called out for it.
So, Vicki, did you say you already did some kind of disciplinary action, or what?
Well, what we just following up, not so far, it's not been, you know, hardcore. Just, well, although some people, there were some stragglers with the staff education, and the manager just recently sent out an email that said, basically, if you don't complete this education by a certain date, you will not be welcome to punch in. And yeah, so that was pretty assertive, and that got the point out there. So, you know, but we had done, like, we're still over 80% on the education. We still had some stragglers. And then just going back, and we've looked at, when we do our surveys, you know, are there, at this point, we're really close to our 80% or over 80% on a lot of things, but there seem to be in some cases where it's maybe one person. So in that case, the managers have been just talking to the staff, coaching at this point, not following it up with, not yet, further disciplinary. And they're hoping that they can just do this with coaching.
That's good. So how about new staff? How do you incorporate new staff into the breastfeeding supportive process and keep up with quality maternity care? I think Lori alluded a little bit to some difficulties when people come from other hospitals. And how soon after hire is this done?
Well, we require that they do it. It's required by Baby Friendly that it's got to be done within 6 months of hire. We have it set up that it is part of hospital orientation when a new employee comes on. So before they're even hitting the floor, during the hospital orientation, they got to do their 20-hour training. And then once they're on the floor, within that first week, they're coming and working with lactation to do their hands-on. We had a little bit of a glitch because we got a new educator. So we were struggling with that until we could get her up to speed, because she's the one that takes everybody through hospital orientation and signs them up during orientation to do different things. And that was a bit of a miss, but once we got her on board, we're back to it's all being done during hospital orientation for new employees.
Mm-hmm. Well, and go ahead, Bernadette.
Okay. So actually, I think that's a great idea. We don't have it going through the regular orientation, but I'm thinking we might go to that. I'm going to try to. But right now, we do make sure they know the policy. I know Baby Friendly says make sure they know the policy within a couple weeks. So but they do, within the first 1 to 2 weeks, they review, because it's, you know, the infant feeding policy has all 10 steps in it. So they do review that and read it. And then we have a skills class that we do. It's a 4-hour class, and we do it every 6 months. Back when we were getting all the older staff in there, we were doing them more frequently, but now it's just for new staff. So every 6 months we do 2 classes, so they can have a choice on a couple times. So that we try to catch all the new staff during that time. And then computer part, they're supposed to do within 6 months. We give that to them. But I have had trouble with them all doing it within the 6-month period. That I have to, it has been a real challenge to go back and make sure that they've done that part, you know, because I know that they're not all doing it. It's basically what's happening. So we end up going a little bit over 6 months on that. But anyway, so that's a challenge. I'm thinking about trying to put it as part of the orientation, I think, if we can do that. But they have so many other things they're doing in orientation. So I got resistance on that because there's just so many things they're doing. And then staff from other hospitals, if they come from a baby-friendly hospital, if they present their certificate for that to me, then they can. They don't have to do the computer part, but we do have them go around with a lactation consultant for one shift.
Great.
So this is Vicki. We do something kind of similar, but we had a little bit of a different, maybe while we were doing this baby-friendly, we had a unique situation of maybe a higher-than-average turnover. And so we were just being cost conscious and didn't want to waste the money on assigning people these modules that they're going to leave, you know, soon after being hired. So that's something that they're looking at hospital-wide and system-wise in Ascension. But so what we opted to do was wait for the online module till they've been here a few months, but before that 6 months. So, you know, we want to assign it right around 3 months. We do have the on-orientation staff goes around with a lactation consultant, and we go through just an observation checklist where we look at the policy, we look at all the breastfeeding-related policies, and we sign off that they've done that. And then we also talk to them about the things that later they're going to be tested on. So we kind of do it as two different things. Here's an introduction during orientation, and then later we do the skills training. And what we decided to do for once we're done getting everybody trained is we have 2 Wednesdays a month where we have regular standing for our skills competency day where they follow a lactation consultant. So they actually go in My Learning and sign up for those days. And then when they come and they go through the checklist and we have them demonstrate manual expression and demonstrate doing a latch and whatever, we sign them off in My Learning. The other part, we do that for 3 hours because they're doing latch and manual expression and answering some of the questions about cue-based feeding, things like that. The other part is formula preparation and breast milk storage and counseling skills. We do that twice a year with our normal competencies. And we have them do for that and for the follow the lactation consultant part. They do an online My Learning module that's just the down and dirty, here are the questions we're going to ask you at this competency. We want to get the didactic part of it out of the way, and then you show up for the competency, and the expectation is you can answer the questions.
Great. Let me see. Okay, so fine. I got 2 more questions. One would be, what has been the most difficult part of this process, and what has been the easiest? And along those lines, have you encountered any surprises, good or bad?
I think for me at Upper Chesapeake, the most difficult part is getting these audits done. And just because we don't have designated time set aside to be able to do that. So we're trying to do it while we're doing patient care and stuff, and that's just been very difficult. Our surprising thing was how quickly our physicians did the training. We got all our physicians done within a month. It was crazy. We thought they were going to be the ones that were going to drag their feet and, you know, throw hissy fits, but they didn't. They did it, and we were done in a month with them.
Wow. This is Bernadette from Harris County. So the most difficult is for us is the pediatricians. We have a lot of pediatricians, and they were very resistant to doing the education and working on it because they're required. It was just the affiliated, and they got it done for us to get designated. But by October of this year, all OBs and pediatricians with privileges have to have that 3 hours of education. So that we had some resistance. I would say that's the most difficult, but I'm just going to have to keep following them till they get it done. And they provided the ways they can do it through the, you know, Maryland, the webinars that the Maryland Department of Health set up. And WellStart.
Yeah,
so
WellStart. Mm-hmm.
Our most difficult thing. And then, of course, the prenatal education in the, like we already talked about, how it's difficult for them to fit it in. They're trying to fit it in. The mothers forget. That's also the most difficult thing. I have to think for a minute what the easiest thing was. Vicki, you can go ahead.
Yes, I would have to echo what you said, and I would classify it sort of differently, and that's that, you know, the nursing staff are nursing employees, and for the most part, it's nursing staff that's running this. We do have a neonatologist who's also on the team, but it's funny because our OBs didn't give any resistance to prenatal education. We do have a overlap of pediatricians with Bernadette's hospital. It's interesting because there has been just such resistance to doing the education. And then when they do it, just tracking down those certificates and things like that. The OBs, I think, are giving some resistance, but I think that's getting easier. I don't know. We're working on it. It's hard to say whether in the end that's going to be a hard one. But one of the other processes with the quality improvement that is also, and this isn't so much required as part of the Maryland breastfeeding policy recommendations, but tracking the purchasing of formula is also another. And I guess it would classify all of this is anytime we have to go outside of our discipline and try to convince people who didn't necessarily sign up for Baby Friendly, but they're part of an organization who says, yeah, but you're going to do it anyway. Those people weren't part of the initial investment. They weren't part of the initial, they're just going about their day, doing their job, and all of a sudden somebody comes down on them and says, you have this extra work you have to do now. And so that, I think, is, I don't know, maybe we could have presented it differently. I don't know what the answer to that is, how to sort of get that hospital-wide engagement, but it has been hard to get that across.
Mm-hmm. Anything else? So if you think back on lessons learned and knowing what you know now after having put any of these things in place, what suggestions would you give to somebody just starting out in this process?
So I know, this is Vicki, and one of the things, we did start off initially with that prenatal education. We had an OB on the group that was then went on to become our medical director, so she stepped off of the group. I would, from the very beginning, really make legitimate multidisciplinary teams so that there's a greater ownership of all these different things, because I think it echoes also what people are saying about the surveys. Maintaining this kind of quality improvement project is time consuming, and it's worthwhile, and it's the data that you collect is valuable. But when more people, when it gets housed where it lives, so to speak, so if the educator is collecting the staff education data and somebody prenatally is in charge of pulling together and disseminating all of that antenatal data, and then the different units take responsibility for some of their parts of the, you know, individual processes that go on, I think that that can really help. That's one of the things I really learned. But getting that multidisciplinary group right from the beginning, and not just one big guiding group, but when you're looking at the smaller processes, once that one OB dropped off, it was a bunch of nurses, and I couldn't rope any more OBs in. But now that we're trying to get it out into the offices, there's a different kind of resistance. And now suddenly they're jumping in and helping. But now, you know, it's hard to, we can't go back and rework this stuff because our visit's coming in a few weeks. So we just kind of have to work with what we have. It would have been easier if those people would have jumped on the bandwagon earlier, because then we could use their input and to tweak our processes.
Yeah, I totally agree with Vicki. You do need to have that right from, and if you can get that right from the start, that is going to be the most helpful thing. Because we had several OBs that worked with us right from, and their buy-in is really good, because then they can influence the other OBs. They're the ones in charge of the practices. That made a huge difference. That's why I really didn't have any trouble with OBs, because we had a couple that were totally on the team and working very actively with this. And then, but we didn't, and then we have our head neonatologist here, 100% was behind Baby Friendly, and which was very helpful, but we didn't have any, what I do wish is that we had more of our, a couple maybe pediatricians, we did have one, she tried very hard, but if we had more, I think that would have been helpful. So getting that multidisciplinary group right from the start makes a huge difference.
And I'm going to say the same thing. And we had it from the beginning. And so everything was going great. But then once we got our certification, these people kind of slowly dropped off, and we can't get replacements. And so our multidisciplinary team is just dwindling down farther and farther and farther. And so the hospital has moved. It's like everybody has moved on to other projects and other things. And it's just really hard to get people roped in and getting them committed to stay with this. And let them know that this has got to continue. It's not a one and done. you know, we got the certification. It's got to keep going, and we still need the help. But I would definitely echo that same thing.
And having the enough staff is an issue too. And I, like Laurie was saying, because we it's hard. We need to get into the OB offices, and that's what made all the difference. We were there a lot, like really making sure they had, and we haven't really since we got our designation. Now, I'm told, they tell me they're still doing everything that they're supposed to do, but I think we need to get some hours designated where we can actually go in there periodically, maybe every few months, and just make sure that everything's being done. That would make a big difference.
One thing that was interesting that we did with that, one of our coaches, because we did have a grant recommended because we were really struggling with the prenatal, to send one of the staff nurses, and this is what I've been doing a lot of. I'm running out to the offices and doing surveys in the offices. It's hugely powerful. I have a summary sheet, a feedback summary sheet that I give them when I leave. So I interviewed 5 of your patients, and it looks a lot like the audit compilation tool that you have from Baby Friendly. And here are the questions I asked. I surveyed this many people. This is how many gave the preferred response. You score at a 20% or an 80% or whatever on this question. And them seeing me in the office kind of puts them on alert that we're still tracking this. So, I mean, we haven't gotten the certification yet, but, you know, I think that was a really good suggestion from our coaches. Now, it's certainly not something I can sustain very long because, you know, it's a lot of work to go out to all the different offices and survey moms. But
yeah.
But even if maybe I went to one office once a month or something and just rotated around so they periodically see me, that might be something that could.
Okay. Oh, and I did that come up with what was the easiest part of the process. They let us, I know I'm backtracking a little bit, but they let us start a breastfeeding support group here, and that was 5 years ago when we were working on this. And it was so popular that we were overflowing that they actually let me open a second one. So we have 2 a week. So that was surprisingly easy that everybody was so behind that, even though that took some of our hours to let me open a second. So now they're every twice a week and well attended.
Right. So is there anybody on the line who wants to ask a question?
This is Dr. Bartlett, and I've been listening in, and thank you for all of your work. I'm a pediatrician, and I'm wondering where any of the data that you survey from the charts actually gets put into the chart, especially on the OB side, because I'm not familiar with it. And does that information ever make its way to the pediatrician?
So by data collection, do you mean the surveys or do you mean the education that happened with a mom?
Yes. In other words, these are interactions with patients, and I'm wondering, does it actually get documented on the electronic medical record? And if so, where? Because I think that when we get the baby's record, we kind of get mom's family history, but we get it as mom's family history, and we have to translate it into, you know,
baby's family history.
Mother is now the grandmother, you know, that kind of thing. But I don't see anything coming over to us, at least on the Epic system, and didn't before on the GE Centricity, anything about mom getting any education prenatally.
They do. I think the expectation is, I know that this is what we're doing, and I believe it's the expectation, is it goes into the electronic medical record. I am going to tell you, in our facility, what happens to that is it goes, the prenatal record, for whatever reason, only goes to the mom's chart. The baby's chart gets the delivery summary and the prenatal record that has, like you said, a superficial overview of the family history. One of the things that we're working on is to make sure that education piece goes into the baby's chart as well. So I know that it's something that, Bernadette, you guys do that? You have prenatal education has to get documented in the EMR, right?
Baby Friendly requires that it is documented. So that was a tough one, too, now thinking back on trying to get the OB offices to figure out where they, because they weren't all on Epic. Only one of them was. So they did come up with something. Like, our other big group was on a different system, but they said they started putting it in their problem list. So they added it in, sort of like, you know, like a care plan type of problem list, and put it in there, and then documented in there when they when they received the booklet and they went over it. But one of our offices is in Epic, and I know they had a place to document it. But it is I don't think it transfers to the baby's chart. It is. It's all on the mom's chart.
And then we, on our end, as far as I know, still have problems with any consistency recording whether that particular baby is, in fact, at any particular visit breastfeeding, because some of the docs put it in and some don't.
Right.
Okay. Well,
the reason I'm emphasizing this is because all of this effort that you all are making, what we'd like to know is, not only is the education happening and mom remembers it, but in fact, as a result of all that education, is the baby actually getting breastfed, and if so, for how long?
Right. What is the outcome?
Oh, yeah, right. I admit we're not doing a follow-up.
Well,
I wish we could. It's hard to – we don't have
yes.
that built in, and we should.
My appeal is just to see if we can think about, you know, how we can make it easier for us to know that. And you know, and creating a feedback loop. So the most powerful thing for a physician or nurse in an office is if they got the information back that Mrs. Smith, who they spoke to when she was 6 months pregnant, in fact is now still breastfeeding her infant when that infant is 6 months old.
Oh, that would be very powerful, I think.
Wouldn't that be powerful?
Yeah.
And I think with the electronic medical record, this should be possible. but maybe, I mean, I'm definitely looking forward way into the future here. But it just seems to me that if we need to encourage people to do something like this, it's only if they see that their effort has had an appreciated response.
Right. That's really very, very true.
Right. And I agree, there should be a way to do that. That should somehow transfer in, like the education prenatally.
Should transfer to the baby's chart, and then the information should go back to the mother's chart that this woman has breastfed for X number of months. And then, of course, we can really know how much of an effect breastfeeding has on women's health, which we have a lot of clues from from research studies. But if we had it pretty much automatically going both ways, this would be a much more powerful tool for the researchers, as well as to encourage ourselves. And as all of you have said so nicely, is our education being effective? You know, is the mom really hearing it? Is it being given in the right packet of information, not too much, not too little, and at the right time? And all those things that you talk about that are so important. But if we could encourage people kind of with a continuous feedback loop in the positive direction, that would help a lot. And then we could know how much our effort is really helping in the long run once this has been going for a while.
Yeah, we need to.
I'm curious, when the hospitals that have, Cerner, some of those, do you have that prenatally in the hospital and postnatally? Because I know that's a challenge here where I am at St. Agnes. Prenatally, some of the groups have Athena, some have eClinical Works. Then when you get in the hospital, it's MedAttack. And then I don't even know which systems the pediatricians use. So we have so little interface. What basically happens,
that's a more global problem than if you have, you know, providers in and out of the hospital on the same system, which makes it a lot easier.
Yeah.
Anybody else?
Thank you so much. I was listening to all of your things. So think about any feedback loops that you can do, you know, informally perhaps, just even of all the women that you gave this information to, X number or percentage left the hospital breastfeeding, you know, anything to encourage them might
that's actually really good.
A twist on this.
Okay. All right, thank you.
You're very welcome.
You collect so much data, adding one more piece is not a big deal.
I mean, if you're
collecting them out and pick up one more truth thing.
I mean, you're going to be collecting that data anyway, aren't you? That how
right,
many women
right.
going home breastfeeding, you're going to be.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to want to know that. Okie doke. Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay.
Any other questions from the field? Anybody on?
Yep, we're still here.
I would say one other thing, Amy, just to close here, is just that, you know, it sounds really cumbersome, and we've talked about the challenges, and oh, yeah, there was this, and oh, yeah, there was that. But I also see extraordinary power in getting the data. And we had for a while this situation where the OBs were really pretty convinced that the moms wanted the babies to go back to the nursery, and the pediatricians were convinced that was the reason. So we did a very intensive 2-week audit where we audited our rooming in practices and the mom's reason for separation and the staff reasons for separation. And we included at the end of it, the final question was, mom, did you ever request that the baby go back to the nursery? And we were able to demonstrate with the data that less than 10% of our moms asked for that. And over 90% of our moms said that they had never wanted their baby to leave the room. And giving that data to our OBs was shocking because they were shocked. They really thought that most moms wanted their babies to go back to the nursery at night. And I really think that presenting that data. So what I would say is, even though it's a lot of work, it's powerful and the numbers speak to people and they can really change practice.
You know, and I was also thinking, as Dr. Bartlett was talking, that if we get the information together and could put it in some kind of article summary form, that AAP might be able to get it out in one of their, you know, communications.
Absolutely. It means state of Maryland chapter.
Right. I'm sorry, the Maryland chapter. Thank you.
Absolutely.
That,
yes.
That we could, you know, because then it goes beyond. It goes beyond one hospital. Well, even if they're not quite at that point yet, can learn from it. And that's what we're all in the business of learning.
Yes, I think that that's a great idea to share some of these efforts and what's worked and what's been difficult in an article there, because then I think the pediatricians will be more aware of what is happening and more likely to cooperate when it's something in our sphere.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we would definitely welcome that.
Sounds good. Any other comments, questions?
Ms. Judy, I think it's also going back, I think it's a good idea to share this information in the tours, because I think that the hardest time is for when mothers expecting one kind of experience to find
right.
out ahead of time that it's, I mean, to not find out ahead of time that it's not going to be the way it was in 1950, you know.
Right.
So I think it's the hardest thing. So adding it to the tours and preparing people for what it's going to be like, and also why is it so good for them? And, you know, how is it that you know, separation is so hard on the babies? Nobody knows that. You know, we still are living in an age of cry it out. So if people, I love the idea of putting it in a tour, that this is what you can expect.
Absolutely.
Right.
Anybody else? Okay, well, I think I think then we've gotten to the end of our call. I want to thank everybody for participating, whether your participation was listening, actively answering questions, asking questions. I think it's been a great call. We've learned some information. I think I've got this one taped, so if that comes out, we'll actually be able to post it so people can listen again or get others at your organizations to listen. We will be hopefully hosting these quarterly. As I said, if anybody has any other topics, feel free to respond to the email we sent about this so that you can share topics and or respond in any of the surveys. I will put a survey out tomorrow through SurveyMonkey to get feedback on how this went for all of you, and if you have any other suggestions for timing or topics to make this most easily accessible for everybody. Thank you, and I hope everybody has a great rest of the day.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.